Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your favorite podcast with your three favorite geniuses giving our not-so-genius takes on all things TCU sports and other things around the country. I'm going to get right to it. I am heavily disappointed. I know normally we break down what went well and what went not well. A lot went well, but so much more went not well, particularly in the second half. Tell me, guys, why did this happen? Why do I have to wake up looking in the mirror myself still after what just happened? What happened and why did it happen?
I think you summed it up perfectly when you said a lot of things went well and a lot of things didn't go well, particularly in the second half. This was a tale of two halves. And went well in the first half.
Well, and I think I said it in our group chat where I was like, look, honestly, being good in the first half is fine. But what makes a good team is being good when it matters. And man, we were not good when it mattered.
I'll start this off with what went well, because that makes me happy. And I want to talk about what makes you sad right now. Passing offense, specifically Josh Hoover. Josh Hoover looks like everything I have hoped for and more. He has over 1,000 yards in the first three games of the season, threw for over 400 in this game against UCF, has 8 touchdowns to 0 interceptions. And honestly, he's really only had like one, maybe two passes that even could have been intercepted realistically. So he's done a great job of protecting the football. I will also say Jack Besh looks like an absolute superstar right now. 200 yards in this game, 9 catches. Like, the dude looks incredible. But the biggest thing to me is that we've got really 4 wide receivers, with Eric McAllister coming back in this game, looking exactly like what we thought we were going to get out of Eric McAllister. And Jack Besh, McAllister, JP Richardson, and Savion, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But those 4 guys alone are all like number one starting receiver calibers in a bunch of teams around the country. And we have all 4 of them on one team. And you look at the stats from last night. I mean, Josh hit, what was it, 9 different receivers for catches this game. I mean, we're spreading the ball around well, and it's a passing offense where, like, you can't just focus in on one receiver like we did with Iomanor for Stanford, because we have 3 other guys that can hurt you. So,
well, and you know what else? I will say the only part where you could have been disappointed on Josh Hoover's part was him not finishing it out in that final drive. But the truth of the matter is, he did everything right that drive. It came down to that last play where it didn't go well. Had he gotten that last pass in, we probably are closer to that field goal and maybe we win it. But Josh Hoover honestly led a pretty impressive, could-have-been game-winning drive that just didn't go his way.
But at the end of the day, he gave us a chance.
And yeah, that's all you can ask. He put us in a position.
Yeah. Hoover's been incredible this season. I saw this on Twitter, and somebody said a lot of the criticism around Josh Hoover coming into the season was, yeah, he threw for a ton of yards last year. He threw a lot of touchdowns in the like 5-6 games he started, but he also like threw an interception for every 2 touchdowns that he threw. And yeah, like Barrett mentioned, he has 8 touchdowns to 0 interceptions. I don't think he's fumbled the ball either. And
we had the one fumble on a handoff, but
yep,
that's right.
Yeah, is that our only turnover this year?
We've had a couple of fumbles.
Wow. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. JPR had that fumble in Stanford.
But all the same, turnover-wise, we do look substantially better than we did last year.
Yeah. I think our wide receivers are incredible.
When Savion got that catch for that touchdown, texts from I recognized there were multiple ones, but the one that was wild, The one that was like, oh, that's fair. The second one is the one I'm referencing.
Okay, yeah.
My phone exploded with coworkers who were like, this Williams guy just made a wild catch. Are you there at the game? And I was not. But my coworkers blew up. Like, it was – Savion looked awesome. Based on fact alone that I just said, when Savion got that touchdown catch and you said, which one? And I then said, the one that was wild, and that also didn't narrow it down. Like, Savion showed up and did what we needed him to do in the end zone. Like Barrett said, Besh was awesome. I felt disappointed by JPR, but that's because he's been one of my favorites and I expect him to be better. But he's done a good job. And like you said, what's his name? The guy who was back, number 88. McAllister. McAllister was doing all you could have expected out of him. We looked rock solid in that department. The other thing, while we're talking about what went well, we should have lost this game by 8 points. This should not have been a close game because they should have gotten 2 field goals and an extra point. They should have gotten an extra touchdown out of their kicker, and we blocked 3 kicks. I mean, that's an insane reality that we blocked 3 kicks. And I don't know enough. I'm kind of an idiot. Maybe it's just because their kicker sucks and they suck. But I was really impressed by our special teams unit this game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think to go back to touch on what you said about Savion, like, you look at both of those touchdown catches. Yes, they're both amazing. They're also both catches where, realistically, there are probably only a handful of receivers in the country that can make both of those catches. And yeah, the fact that Savion Williams is a freak of an athlete, he's 6'5", has the range to go up and sky 2 guys and just moss a bunch of guys for a touchdown, high points that, like, that's probably a catch that is at the top of his range, and he's a guy who's 6'5". And then you go to the second catch where he's stopping on a dime and reaching all the way back to catch that. Again, freak athleticism to be able to slow his massive frame down that quickly and then be able to reach back and grab that ball. Those are 2 passes where, realistically, there aren't many receivers in the country that have the athleticism or the ability to make either of those catches.
Yeah. If he could fix the easy drops, please.
Yeah.
That's my one gripe was the catches that he made were spectacular. And then he dropped that one. It was his first target of the game that hit him in the chest. And he just didn't use his hands to catch it.
Yep.
But I mean, it didn't end up hurting us. We still scored on that drive. But still,
at the same time, it's going to end up hurting us if we don't handle that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think to stay on the offensive side of the football right now, we did a great job converting on third downs, especially in that first half. And a lot of those third downs were 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, where we didn't really move the ball at all. It was just Josh and the receivers making plays. Yeah. Props to the O-line. They kept Josh pretty much upright most of the game. I will say he made a lot of throws where he knew he was going to get hit, and he stood in there and delivered a strike. And I think that's another thing to commend him for, because a lot of quarterbacks around the country would fade away from that hit because they don't want to take a massive hit and lose a bunch of velocity, maybe some accuracy, and maybe that turns into a pick when instead it's a strike to Jack Besh or a strike to Savion, whatever that might be. I think where our offense really, really struggled was in the run game. And I think a lot of it comes down to, we just didn't try to run the ball really at all the entire game.
Yeah.
Well,
there was no effort.
And
one of you made this point in our chat where it was like, our running game wasn't stopped. We didn't even try to do it to get it stopped. Like, we made no attempt to run the ball. And half the time that Cam Cook was getting the ball, we were passing to him.
I remember watching the first drive of the game and thinking, okay, this would be a good time to get the running game started. this would be a good time to get the running game started. I think that we ran the ball once on the first drive, which again, in the first half, it didn't hurt us at all. We scored 4 out of the 5 drives that we had, and I don't count the kneel at the very end of the half. But yeah, and I think the running game could have been good. I'm looking at UCF's defensive stats right now. They had 0 sacks, and they had 1 tackle for loss. Like, with those stats, you'd think, oh, our running game could have been pretty good, but we just didn't try. We had 53 passing attempts to 17 rushing attempts. And I know that when Kendall Briles came in, yeah, they said he was a passer, but Sonny Dykes also mentioned that they want to get closer to 50-50 or 60-40 pass to run. And we were not close to that. We were at almost – we were at over 75% pass plays this game. And when you have a big lead in the second half, and we were up by, what, 8 in the fourth quarter? I think.
Yeah.
Not,
yeah.
It was either 8 or maybe it was 9. And – when you're up by that much, yeah, you still want to score, but you got to run the clock out. And every time a pass isn't caught, the clock stops. And not only does it stop on the incompletions, but we were also snapping the ball with 20 seconds left on the play clock. Even with our like second to last drive, when there was 5 minutes left in the game, when we ran basically 3 straight screens and everybody flipped out because that was just so dumb. Josh was snapping it with 20 seconds left on the play clock. Take the time. Waste the time.
And one of the things that with this run game, right, like you look at UCF's offense. UCF obviously ran the ball down our throats. They're the number one rushing team in the country, and they looked like it in this game. We could not stop the run game. But if you look at their offense, it's a lot of the same plays, just or the same setup, just slightly different variations. So you'll have a guy come across for maybe a jet sweep pass. That could be a quick pass. We can do the same thing with JP Richardson and use that as eye candy to get Cam Cook out in the open, right? You can play this offense in a way where it doesn't have to be anything super fancy, but it makes it to where the defense takes a second to be able to make a decision. And by that point, you have an open lane already, right? And I think a lot of the issue that comes with our run game is we didn't try to set Cam up for success in any way of using the receivers that we have to be able to bring attention away from him.
Well, and I think a lot of it, like you just said, you could do those things would work, but I had somebody tell me that they like Kendall Briles, except for the fact that he just tries to get too cute with it sometimes. And I felt like he somehow threaded the needle between getting too cute with it or not cute at all. Specifically when not cute at all was what we didn't need and too cute was what we, like, he looked for what we didn't need. And you know what? The truth of the matter is I can't criticize him that much. Because our offense did more than enough to win this game, like even with the mistakes that were made at various points. And then our defense did more than enough to win this game. Every unit did more than enough to win this game, and then the second half happened. Did we lose, Jacob?
Yeah, and flipping over to the maybe, I don't know. Flipping over to the defense,
flip over.
So I think
no,
that
you haven't lost me.
Realistically, right, TCU's defense couldn't stop the run. Now, I think some of that is us not actually having a great run defense, and really it's mostly because we don't have the depth on the D-line, because losing Dominic Williams threw a wrench in our defensive line where we couldn't fill the void quickly or in time.
Yeah.
I think take that with a grain of salt, and us not being able to stop the run, because again, this is an offense who prior to this game was averaging 419 yards per game rushing.
Well, and there's they also have the fact a
fantastic
that
running back.
Well, I think I'm going to say what you're about, what you were building to there is the fact that it's not possible to tackle KJ Jefferson on the first try. That's just not an, I'm a KJ Jefferson hater, but dear Lord, every time we hit him, you had to hit him two times for him to go down.
And look, as an Arkansas fan, like that hurt that KJ Jefferson is the one that beat us, but that was entirely his best trait while he was at Arkansas was that you would think you have a sack and he just does not go down.
And well, like we're a team that's been criticized for headhunting and playing dirty. We're not one that is supposed, and this year we're apparently going for the quarterback harder than ever before. Like we were going for him. We were trying to hit him and we were hitting him. And then he was not getting hit.
Yeah. I think as a whole, the defense did a good job of playing their keys, right? We didn't let KJ Jefferson beat us by running a read option running on the outside. We did let RJ Harvey do what RJ Harvey does and beat us by running up the middle. But at the end of the day, I don't necessarily think we can hold this entirely on the defense or the defensive line, because at the end of the second half, those guys were gassed. You saw it, and Harvey was pretty much kept in check a lot of the game until we got to really halfway through the third quarter, and that's when they started gashing us. And part of that is we just don't have the depth in that front seven to be able to sustain a war of attrition on that O-line for four quarters.
And on top of it, I think one of the best defenses you could make for our defense, to give them some credit here, is imagine how this conversation's going if Hoover does complete that final pass. We're 10 yards closer, and Lemmerman doesn't go wide right, and we win this game on a nail biter. We're sitting here celebrating, talking about what an impressive defensive performance the first half was. We're sitting here celebrating how good the offense was. Like, obviously we lost, and that makes this depressing. But if we had gotten a field goal or more, if we had blocked one more kick, think about what we're saying on this same podcast, looking at the same game, albeit one change. We're not sitting here saying, wow, it was disappointing how much they gave up in the second half. I mean, we're still disappointed by it. We make a comment on it. But you know we're sitting here singing the defense's praises for what they did in the first half if that game ends in a win. If that game ends 2 points differently than it did, we're sitting here talking about how it was the best we could have asked for from our defense in the first half. So it's hard to blame it all on them when you know there's a parallel universe where the three wise men are sitting there saying, wow, this is the year our defense has it together.
Yeah. What frustrated me was that, Remember the Titans, when they're headed off to their training camp and coach hands the playbook out. And what's his name goes, this is the playbook? He's like, yep. I run the same 8 plays over and over again. Just 8 plays. And that's exactly what UCF did. They ran the exact same 8 plays over and over again. They said, I don't care if you know what we're doing. We're going to do it regardless. And we're going to beat you. We're going to beat you at it. And I think in the first half, we knew what they were doing. And we stopped them. And then in the second half, they beat us at it. And that was the difference.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen Andy Avalos make more adjustments than he did in this game, because they were getting on average like 5 yards a carry, 4 yards a carry all game. And so you're setting up 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3 the entire game. And that's exactly the position where they want to be in, we don't want to be in, because it's easy to be able to scheme, maybe I have to defend the pass. Oh, they're just going to run it down my throats again and gash me for 5 yards because I'm trying to defend the pass too, right? One of the biggest telling factors, I think, where it tells me that our D-line really needs to step up, and as well as our, I would say, our linebackers as a whole. Six or four of our top six leading tacklers were all defensive backs. The top two were Ja'Travis Broughton, who we need to touch on because he was terrible this game, and Jamel Johnson, who has been phenomenal all season. But then you get into Nnamdi and Johnny Hodges and blah, blah, blah. But the first defensive lineman that you get to is seven guys down. Now, yes, like D linemen don't necessarily get a lot of tackles, blah, blah, blah. But you would expect them to at least be disruptive in a manner to where they could get maybe like a half tackle or a group tackle, right? And I'm just not seeing that in these, in the numbers. And I didn't see that in this game where they weren't getting any push. They were getting pushed around the entire game by the UCF offensive line. And consequently, they're not eating up blocks, which means that Johnny Hodges and Nnamdi can't fill lanes. And I don't think we did a great job of wrapping up, but we didn't necessarily let RJ Harvey get a bunch of extra yards after contact.
Yeah, this will be the best offensive line that we face for the rest of the season. I will say that. They were full of fourth, fifth-year players. So that is something that, that we can take heart in. But, yeah, I'm completely with you. The defensive line was non-existent. It kind of reminded me of last year. Really, the second half just reminded me of last year. It reminded me of why everybody was frustrated.
Well, I think we even said it after the Stanford game. I mean, yes, there were a lot of mistakes, but we said last year our guys just kind of gave up. They didn't care. They weren't having fun. And we said it looked after the Stanford game, and especially after the Long Island bonding experience, it looked like the guys were in it. It looked like they were having fun, and they were playing sloppy in the Stanford game, but they were playing. And these guys were playing, but they just, by the second half, were out of steam. There was just nothing left in them. And it looked like the guys who had given up last year. But I will say, if I'm going to take you at your word, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. If this really is the best offensive line we should be expecting to go up against, that makes me feel really good about this year. Because like I said, we were 2 points away from this whole season, from this whole game being the game we point to prove we've got it together. We did a very good job until we didn't. And if we're going up against offensive lines that are going to wear us out a little slower than this team wore us out, I have a lot of hope for our defense this year.
Yep.
Yeah.
And with that, this defense, we have anything else? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I got two things. I think this defense is wildly missing a disruptive guy in the center of the defensive line, and I'm talking about Dominic Williams. Tymon Mitchell is great. I like him, but Dom was so much better at disrupting a run and blowing up plays in the middle of an O-line, and maybe he wasn't the guy that got the tackle, but he was the guy that ended a play. And before it even started. And I think realistically, we don't have that this year, and it showed in this game. The other piece of this is that KJ Jefferson was not asked to do a lot in this game from a passing standpoint. He threw the ball 22 times, had 13 completions, six of which went to Kobe Hudson. And if you look at this game, it was every single time, basically, it was Ja'Travis Broughton getting burned by his man and or getting mossed by his man, specifically Kobe Hudson.
He did not have a good game.
And or getting flagged because he got burned.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yep.
Yeah. It was a rough game, and I think we can just chalk it up at that. Hopefully he learns from it. And, yeah, there's not really much to say about his performance other than it was bad.
Yeah, I would say, I think that realistically, right, this, his performance reminded me a lot of Trey Tomlinson. And the reason I say that is because if you look at Trey Tomlinson in his time at TCU, a lot of the throws that got thrown his way, he was right there with his man. And I think the difference is that he had the discipline to not foul every single time, whereas Broughton so far has not had that. And I think that's the biggest difference between the two, is that like Trey had a few times where he got mossed similar to Broughton because a dude just went up and made a play. Like, I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is you flailing around and giving them a 15-yard penalty when it's 3rd and 8 and should be a 4th down because you played great coverage.
Yeah. An absolute flailure, if you will.
Boo.
You're all welcome. I'll be here all week.
Oh, Lord. All right, let's stop talking about this, though.
All right, so before – hold on. Before we move on to SMU, because I agree, we do need to stop talking about this because I'm going to blow my brains out on air if I have to think about this game any longer. But before we move on to SMU, I want to get a pulse check because 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, we predicted roughly that TCU goes 10-2. Now, in that 10-2, we had a win over UCF, but we did describe UCF as a coin flip game. And all of us said that UCF was one of the games this season we were most scared of. And we said it largely for the reasons that were the reason we lost this game. Are we still feeling that? I mean, 10-2, maybe a lot, because that's, we still have the two games we thought we would end up losing and we lost this game. Is this like a Colorado game where our momentum feels destroyed, or are we still feeling this is a good season? I'm still feeling fantastic, but I live my life through purple-tinted glasses. So how do y'all look, pulse check, on the rest of the season? What do you feel after this game?
I still feel like this is a good season at the end of the day. I think we beat SMU. I think Kansas looks way more beatable, maybe less of a 50-50 game now.
Oh, Houston's wait, I think Kansas was the one that we all picked to lose.
I was going to say, that's part of, that was my next point I was going to make, was that, yes, we picked to win UCF, but we picked to lose Kansas. And I think if all three of us got asked that again, we would not make that pick again.
Yep. I think Kansas has Devin Neal, who's a good running back. Like, they're a run-first team too, but maybe less so to the level of UCF. Houston's definitely beatable. Like, I think that's an easy win. Utah is beatable, especially if Cam Rising is not playing. But Utah was one of those games where we thought that we would was a 50-50 game, and maybe leaning a little more towards a loss. Tech is beatable. Baylor's beatable. Oklahoma State is a run-first offense, but again, and also has a fantastic offensive line, speaking as an Arkansas fan. But I think realistically, they're not to the level that UCF has been in the run game. And Ollie Gordon has not looked like himself from last year. Arizona looked like a fantastic offense, and that was the team that I picked for us to lose to, actually. But realistically, they don't look as good as they did last year. And Cincinnati's a beatable team.
I genuinely, and I'm not saying this to say that we will beat every team on our list. I don't think there's a team on our list we can't beat.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if Cam Rising gets hurt again, which is an extremely real possibility.
If Cam Rising is down, I see 10-2, which was our original projection, as still very doable. All right. Yeah. Well, with that, I wanted our pulse check. We got it. Let's move into next week. It is the last, for now, ever scheduled battle for the Iron Skillet. We are going up against an SMU who most recently lost in a Thursday night game to the great and mighty perennial powerhouse that is BYU in an ugly football game. But since then, they've had a bye week, and every one of them was sitting there taking notes on UCF beating us. What should we expect from this SMU game?
Apparently poor quarterback play, because Preston Stone is no longer their starting quarterback, and it's Kevin Jennings, who is more of a mobile threat, but I don't think he's that good of a passer, just having watched him this season. He's got one touchdown, one pick. I don't know what's happened with SMU and Preston Stone, because Preston Stone was supposed to be the guy, and the fact that he is no longer the starting quarterback says maybe they weren't as high on him as the rest of the country was. Rashard Smith is an okay running back, but he struggles to hold on to the football a little bit. I think realistically, this is an offense that's going to run a fast tempo, similar to how we run or have liked to run our offense, I should say. I don't think that they have shown that they were the quote-unquote SMU of last year offense. Like, they just haven't shown that they're able to beat someone with their offense.
And it's also worth noting, they're not living up to be the quote-unquote SMU of last year, and we beat the quote-unquote SMU of last year by, like, 30.
By 8.
Yeah, but it felt like 30.
It did. The line's out.
I will say already. This is a very balanced.
But, yeah, we're projected. We're 2.5-point favorites.
We beat them by not 8. We beat them by 17 last year.
Oh, they were terrible.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm like, I know it wasn't 30, but I was like, yeah, we pretty handily beat the SMU of last year. And this SMU has not lived up to that SMU.
And that is an SMU last year. And that's an SMU last year with a much better offensive line.
Yes. And with Preston Stone, apparently, who is not good enough.
Yeah, that makes me laugh, because just watching all of the SMU fans on Twitter just self-destruct when that news came out.
The SMU fans on Twitter genuinely drank their own Kool-Aid and bought their own BS. And they had this real belief that because they paid the ACC $7 trillion to let them play at recess with them, that they would all of a sudden become really, really good. And they did not become any better. They, in fact, became worse because they lost all of their money. And they talked this big game about this crazy NIL thing they were putting together. But it turns out that their team sucks cold hard balls. And on Saturday, it's going to suck Josh Hoover's cold hard balls. And quite frankly, you said the line is 8?
No, the line is 2.5.
2.5. That's a ridiculously low line. I think by all statistics, we should win this game by 40. However, I think the line is going to be exactly right because this is a rivalry game and they're going to come with their track shoes and they're going to try and beat us. So we're going to watch us barely cover, if we cover at all, because the line does know those factors, that it is the last ever battle for the Iron Skillet. So they're going to play their best game of the year. But they're not good at football. We're going to win this game. And to show that I'm not just biased, 1 week after we beat SMU, SMU is going to beat my Florida State Seminoles. But that's because everyone in the country is going to beat my Florida State Seminoles this year. They may go 0-12.
Question for you, Connor. How confident are you that we'll beat SMU?
Very.
Like, would you be willing to eat a red Solo cup full of dog poop if we lose?
I will eat a red Solo cup full of dog poop, and I will tase my balls on this show if we lose to SMU.
All right.
And if I'm wrong, I don't have to delete my Twitter because I'm off Twitter.
Well, the show will still be up.
No, I will do it.
And
on
we have a YouTube.
If we lose to SMU.
Oh man, yeah, I think that guy.
Literally, next week, I will bring my red Solo cup and eat it throughout the episode. I will savor it throughout the episode if we lose this game. You can
be
tweet it from our show account.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That will happen.
Go for it.
Oh, yeah, I think we'll beat SMU. I'm not terribly worried. The only other betting line that I'm interested in for this game is how many personal fouls Jordan Hudson has against us. How many people is Jordan Hudson going to punch in this game? Because I think he has at least one personal foul in every other game they've played this year.
Well, and this one's heated, being a rivalry game against his old teammates. If he's punching BYU fans, or not fans, players, then imagine the emotion that he'll have in this game.
Yeah.
My question with this, I think there's a very real scenario. I think we win this game handily. But I also think it looks a lot like the UCF game. Or maybe it looks the opposite of the UCF game. But I think this ends up being another tale of two halves. And I don't know if it'll be a great first half followed by slow decay or an awful first half followed by a comeback. But I feel with these rivalry games, people get worn out. They're giving it their all. And we're going to end up watching people get exhausted and it being another tale of two halves. And I think that's the reason it ends up coming down to a 2.5-point spread.
Fair. Yeah. Anyways.
All right.
Should we make picks?
I've got my picks ready if you're ready to go.
You want to update us on the scores?
Yes, I do. So it's worth noting that we didn't do picks last week because we didn't have an episode. I've run the numbers again correctly, and I know I'm right this time. Jacob is in first place with 15. I am in second place with 14, and Barrett is in third with 12. And it is specifically because I can't believe I'm saying this. Thank God Texas beat Michigan. I also lost points on that, but it took Barrett down a peg, and I was very scared that he would take points there and narrow that spread. But Barrett did, just to give him credit, because he always calls one of the upsets of the week. I want to give Barrett credit for the fact that he called one. Iowa State loses to Iowa every year. And Barrett was a Matt Campbell truther and was the only one of us that picked that upset. But for all intents and purposes, it's very early in the season. The scores have Jacob in first place, but no one is running away to the front or to the behind. I'm not going to comment on who ran away to the behind last year. That feels unimportant. But no one is running away any direction right now. I would update you on the mystery game. I know that team 2 won because I marked it down when it happened. And I know that it was a soccer game, but I don't remember what soccer game it was. I sent it to our group chat and I tried to find it here so I could comment on it in the episode. In a soccer game, team 2 won.
Connor does not care about soccer enough for it to matter. Yes.
With that being said, we've got our week 4 picks. We are effectively all one upset away from taking first place or last place. Illinois at Nebraska. Jacob.
I'm going to take Nebraska here.
Barrett.
Nebraska looks good, but I think they stumble against Illinois.
I am with Barrett. I have Illinois winning this one. I think Nebraska does look better than they've been, but they are still a dumpster fire, and eventually they are prone to disappoint their fans, and I think this is finally the time. TCU at SMU. I think we all just said we think TCU will win that game.
Yeah.
Go Hawks.
Okay, yeah. TCU across the board. The remainder of this, and in fact, the two we've already included, I want to say this week is actually a bunch of games that I think will be close games, but are a bunch of mid-offs. And with that, but I think they're very evenly matched mid-offs. I think they're appropriate mid-offs. With that in mind, Kansas at West Virginia. Jacob.
West Virginia.
Barrett.
I think Kansas gets a bounce back game in this one and comes out of Morgantown with a dub.
I also have West Virginia. I'm going against Barrett here, and I don't like when we both go against Barrett. But I will say, I can't believe Kansas at West Virginia is a toss-up. Like, I can't believe we had to think about that at all. Had you asked me 2 weeks ago, I said would have said without a doubt, I probably wouldn't have picked that game for us to pick. It would have been an obvious Kansas.
All right. Well, I mean, for me, it's the only reason that I'm picking West Virginia is because it's at home. Like,
well, that, by the way, that's the thing that's for me. Morgantown's a hard place to play, and that was the only factor for me.
Yeah.
Not the only factor, the only deciding factor. All right, USC at Michigan. Jacob.
Oh, USC. What's the line on this one?
I don't know.
Because
Barrett, while he looks that up, USC at Michigan.
I will not be picking my sister's alma mater ever. So Unfortunately, I have to pick Michigan, who I think is terrible.
So I kind of picked this one to force Barrett into that position. But then the more I thought about it, I'm also picking Michigan. I think Michigan is terrible, but I also think that they're going to win this game. It's at Michigan, and they've really disappointed, and they need to do something, and there will be a lot of eyes on them because it's USC, so I'm giving it to Michigan. I can see Jacob actively shaking his head.
Man, Michigan, their quarterback threw three interceptions against Arkansas State.
Oh, that is true. I still picked Michigan. I said it on there already.
Didn't Arkansas play Arkansas State?
No, we played Arkansas Pine Bluff.
That's what it was. No, their quarterback threw three picks against Arkansas State. My grandparents are both Michigan grads, and they were worried about losing that game during the first half. USC is going to run away with it. The line is 6. I am taking USC in the over, and USC by 6. And I might, the over under for the game is only 46.5 on ESPN. That's not a bad one either. But yeah, no, Michigan's going to lose this one big time.
All right. Arkansas at Auburn, Jacob.
I don't know anything about either of these teams. I'm going to go with Auburn so that I can maybe get a point up on Barrett.
All right, Barrett.
Arkansas looked terrible this week. They almost lost to Alabama Birmingham, who has a decent quarterback, but also lost to Louisiana Monroe the week before. So, I think Auburn is not a good team right now in the SEC. And that makes me feel slightly better about picking the Hogs.
So, again, I picked this to specifically target Barrett. And then I, again, ended up agreeing with him. I'm picking Arkansas. Because I remembered living in Auburn for 6 months. And I've never seen such a storied, prideful fan base that seemed so universally depressed. And they just seemed way too disappointed for me to pick. And I don't know what they look like this year, but all of my Auburn friends are going into this year thoroughly unexcited. And for that reason, I was like, I think Arkansas has it, if for nothing else, because Auburn has a way of disappointing until they play Alabama, having one really good game on the season and giving themselves hope for next year.
Auburn right, next lost to Cal 2 weeks ago.
And that's my point. Like, Auburn just is disappointing.
I'm going to switch my pick to Arkansas after learning that Auburn lost to Cal.
I didn't put it in these because I ran out of picks. I was looking at the Florida State-Cal game because that will be torture to watch, but it would be a really difficult pick. Both of those teams are really going to go out and try to lose. But next up, I've got Arizona State at Texas Tech.
I'll take ASU.
Barrett?
Texas Tech just stomped North Texas in a game where Chandler Morris threw three picks and three straight passes. So,
but can we give Texas Tech any credit for that, or does Chandler Morris really deserve the majority of the credit for that?
I don't know. Either way, I'm picking Texas Tech just to solidify my solidarity of a team that beat up on Chandler Morris.
That's fair. I'm picking Arizona State, and I have to say, Barrett is the one of us going with the spread. The spread it's very small. It's like 2.5 points, but the spread, at least when I wrote this and checked it, had Texas Tech picked to beat Arizona State. And while Texas Tech did beat up on UNT, it's worth noting that everyone else has beat up on them. They're 2-1, but one is a loss, and then one of the two was a very embarrassing nail-biter over a made-up team. Texas Tech looks rough this year. All right, this one I actually think would be a fun game to watch. Utah at Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State will win this one, I think. And Cam Rising will get hurt again.
Barrett.
I don't think OSU's defense is good enough to keep hold of this Utah offense. I think both of these teams want to run the ball a lot. This is going to be a game where it's going to be whether or not Ollie Gordon can get back to last year Ollie Gordon. If he's held to roughly around 100 yards or so, then I think OSU loses this game. That being said, I'm going to err on the side of just this season so far, and I don't think Ollie Gordon has been nearly as good as he was last year, so I'm going to pick Utah.
All right. Wait, hold on. Jacob, who'd you pick?
I picked Oklahoma State.
That's what I thought, and then I wrote down Utah, so I have to correct that. I'm going with Jacob. I think Oklahoma State wins this game. It's at home. If Cam Rising is hurt at all, it's over for them. As we saw in that Baylor game, they were dominating, and then Cam Rising was out, and it became a closer game. They live and die with Cam Rising, and even if they live, Oklahoma State's a good enough team. I think Oklahoma State wins this one. Tennessee at OU, Jacob.
I also want to add about Utah. I think they're the second most hated fan base in the conference other than Colorado, and just hated school in the conference. Nobody likes Utah. Everybody's going to want to beat them this year.
Here's the thing. Utah has earned that by the way their fans have acted. One of their fans has the ego of Deion Sanders. The only reason Colorado is hated more is that Deion Sanders is in your face on ESPN. But if they were interviewing Utah fans regularly on ESPN, we would hate them more. Like, every one of their fans has his attitude.
Absolutely.
All right. Tennessee at Oklahoma.
Oklahoma by a landslide.
Barrett.
Nico, I love you, or whatever, however you pronounce his last name, has looked fantastic for Tennessee this year. I think that they are going to sneak one out against OU. I don't think OU is as good as they have been in years past. I think Dom has a good game, but outside of that, Tennessee's winning this one.
On my heart alone, I want Oklahoma to lose at home, so I'm picking Tennessee. Speaking of hated fan bases, Baylor at Colorado. Jacob.
Jesus.
I abstain.
I refuse to take any points.
Yeah, I don't want points. I will just drop the point from this game. I don't want to pick this game.
Is this your Connor, I hate you.
I take team three. I'm not picking.
Okay, Jacob abstains. I'm fine with that. Barrett.
I'm going to pick Travis Hunter getting hurt. And Jesus,
Barrett, refuse.
I do not like Deion Sanders at all.
Refuse to pick Barrett. Join me.
No, I'm not picking on this one.
You know what? I had a pick, but your peer pressure is joined. I'm going to abstain as well. I am going to pick that, much like Mystery Game 1 of last season, one of these teams forfeits and a third team comes into play and they win. Oh my gosh. When I picked that, I knew it was going to be funny. I did not know that y'all would both abstain. That could not have gone better. All right, Mystery Game. I picked... had my Excel picker pick for me again. I don't know who we're playing yet because my students won't pick it until tomorrow, but there was way too much stress in my heart picking an actual number. So I'm team one, according to my Excel random spreadsheet picker. I was way more stressed over picking one or two than I was over picking actual games. So I'm one, Jacob.
I will be team two.
Barrett.
Team two won it for me last week, or last time we picked, I guess. I'm picking team two again.
All right. I'd like to say this game this week has an opportunity for a lot of change up. I'm looking through our picks. There is a lot of variety amongst us, and especially between you two. You two almost didn't pick the same team a single time. There are a couple y'all picked, but like it is, this is going to be a week that I don't know who's going to benefit, but there will be some changes in the standing after this week.
Someone is going to be very far ahead and very far behind. Yeah,
we're going to see someone take a commanding lead this week, whoever it may be. That being said, those are my picks for the week. I think we're good to go. We're getting close to an hour. I think we're rock solid. We have anything else we need?
Go Frogs. It'll be better.
All right. Hopefully. Thank you all for tuning in to your three favorite geniuses giving their not so genius takes on all things football. Particularly our takes on the Baylor Colorado game. We were genius, but our predictions may have been proven wrong that team three will win. Thank you all for listening. Like and subscribe wherever you're listening, and go Frogs.